Welcome back. Segment 2, episode 235, the IT and the D Show broadcasting live here, Studio 1, Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. Bob the Sales Guy hanging out with Dave the Geek, Nuri the FNG, Randy, I do the Twitter's Walker. Find us online, itandthed.com, because we are IT and the D. And
you still aren't.
We You're love not. You. Muy, muy.
We're coming up on the 3-year anniversary. No, actually, the 5-year anniversary of No, You're Not. No, You're Not.
And No,
No You're Not.
So, hey, we are extremely lucky this evening to be joined by an absolute local radio legend, the man with the golden voice, the voice of the Internet Advisor show on WJR, Foster Brown. How are you, sir?
I am delighted to be here. It's fun just to sit and kind of bask in the craziness.
Dude, he starts talking, I feel like we have to straighten up.
No, because remember when we started the podcast and I wanted to do radio voice and I pushed my voice and it sounded stupid.
It was horrible.
It's Foster's voice. Like, it's not like that's him. Like, he'll say, "Hey, Bob, can you get me a bottle of water?" Like, "Oh my God, that sounds beautiful." Like,
well, you know, that's funny because that's how my career started 44 years ago. Somebody said, "Hey, you really got a voice for radio." And at that point, I was doing something completely different.
And they didn't mean you were ugly. They meant you had a nice right. voice. Like, right.
You were a face for radio.
Right.
But the voice for radio was okay. And I went to the Spex Howard School of Broadcasting.
That was around 44 years ago?
Yeah. It was 1974.
Okay.
And I went there, and I was in one of the early classes there. And while I was there, I discovered I really liked doing talk radio. And did fairly well at it. I was, you know, comfortable with it, and people were comfortable with me when I interviewed them. And that was kind of what started me going. I worked as a program director for a little bitty ethnic radio station in Garden City for 6 years, but that was just kind of launched me. And then after a series of firings.
Which, did a polka? You were at a polka station?
Yes, of course. It was. Oh, the polka, the Chaldeans, the Israelis, the Ukrainians, all of them. 44 different language groups.
Wow. Well, it's 40. Wow.
Yeah. I know. Detroit has such a rich history as an ethnic area that.
Sure.
It was incredible. It was fascinating. Absolutely fascinating for me.
So we're celebrating your 20th anniversary of the Internet Advisor Show on WJR.
That's incredible.
Isn't it?
It is incredible. I think it's been 20 years. We got on shortly after the internet started.
I was going to say, that's right about when I got my first AOL CD. And
yep. So people were calling, trying to troubleshoot Netscape Navigator right. 1.1, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was really wild. It actually started off with me having problems getting in, you know, my modem to work. And so I called my ISP. That happened to be Gary Baker, who owned BizServe at the time. One of the first... ISPs in Detroit. I think.
No, so. It was. Yeah, yeah.
Was it? Yeah.
There was right. only a handful back then.
And they
then,
started
yeah.
out of Merritt in Ann Arbor. And Gary, I was doing the weekend program on JR. So, you know, the process I was in was something that had been going on for JR for a long time of the weekend programs and things like that. But what was new then was introducing this element of the internet. And, people took to it like ducks to water. It started off with my questions to Gary about my service. And then I said, "Hey, why don't we open the phone lines in the last half hour of the program on Saturday mornings? And if anybody out there has a question for us," boom, we started getting the questions. And that really has been the balance of what we do and what I love doing, really, to be honest with you. With the program.
Our favorite segment every time we're on.
Huh?
That's our favorite segment every time we're on.
It is. The people that you get are just fascinating. And I love that the ability to interact with the audience. That's been my...
Yeah.
So what's probably the most memorable call you've had in the 20 years you've been doing this show?
Maybe there's been so many of them. I don't know
if it's the weirdest tech problem or like just the weirdest person calling. I mean, anytime you interact with the public, you've got that element of... Maybe
well,
something's going to go really
you were
weird
teasing
here.
Beforehand about the time that you were on the air with us,
right.
I think, was like, you know, somebody's calling up with, you know, a problem with their computer. Okay, well, what operating system are you running? Windows 95? Oh, hold it.
What year is it again?
That was, in 2016.
Last year, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'll never forget because the guy was talking about his brother printer, and I go, I'm sitting there going, "Bob, please don't say – please keep your mouth shut, Bob. Please keep your mouth shut, Bob." And finally, like, you know what? Maybe it's just a good time to throw it away. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, buy 50
bucks. To be honest with you, that would be the answer to probably about 30% of the calls we get.
Right.
They're a lot of JR's been around for a long time. It's a heritage radio station, so they have a lot of older folks who just have the radio turned on all day long. You know, maybe your grandparents, your parents, you know, great grandparents, listening to the programs that were on JR. And so these are people who are, many of them, just kind of backing in. One of the, you know, you asked an interesting question. On the 3rd of February, it was the actual 20th anniversary. Right at the end of the program, you got this long testimonial from the son of one of our listeners who said, I just want to thank you so much because you took my mother out. She was a nurse, apparently, who was about to be, as the British say, made redundant because she couldn't keep up with the tech. Hmm. And he said, you explained the technology in a way that she could get hold of it. And then so apparently she had like her lady friends got together and listened to the program and it made it accessible to them. So that she said, practically speaking, she was able to get X number more years of working and her Social Security is secure.
Very cool.
So I thought, wow, what a testimonial to have at the end of the – because that really, again, is – that connection with the listener is really what it's all about.
You guys have patience of saints. I mean, and I'm sitting there the whole time going, throw it away, just throw it away, throw it away. And you guys are explaining it and you're Googling the questions or just Google it. Why don't you just Google it? Like when my kids come to me with a problem now, just if you Googled it, then why are you asking me? Just Google it because I'm going to Google it.
Well, that's what we were doing on this show. People were asking questions and I'm like, oh, shit.
Oh, yeah, we were all
over here. Yeah. Fingers are clacking all the time during the show as people – and I'm also – we've been really blessed with some great techs. Ed Riddell and Cal Carson, Shane Hamlin, a whole bunch of guys. Now, Kasten Thomas, who's been on here with you guys.
Sure, many times.
Where did you find these guys? Like, you've got a posse now.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? Gary was working for EDS, and he ran into Ed as one of – he had a tech need, I guess. Called him up. Ed came in, and – they made the connection. And then Cal was the Apple expert on that desk there. So they made the transition together. Before that, we had a guy named Tom Dyroff who was just really, really, really good with – I mean, he could take anything apart. And he was such a cheapskate. I mean, he could squeeze a nickel to make the Buffalo move. he was incredible. Matter of fact, one time on the show, he actually bought – that's in quotes – bought a laptop for nothing – they paid him when he did all of the, you know, the coupons
right.
and the rebates and everything else. He got it for nothing. And as a matter of fact, they owed him some money at the end of it. But that's the kind of guy he was. So those are the kind of people that we got to help do. And then people like, I think we ran into Kasten. Why did we run into him? I forget how, but it was just, he was a guest, I think. Oh, no, he knew Gary, of course. And Gary has been, you know, like kind of a magnet for all of these people. That have been there and really has held it together.
Well, I know Tom Lawrence has been on a couple times.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes. Oh, he is, yeah.
From really Lawrence good. Systems?
Yeah, Tom Lawrence Systems.
Yeah.
Good example. Yeah, exactly. Good example of somebody who's really knowledgeable. And I like the way he handled the listeners, too. He was good at that.
Yeah, I thought we were going to keep Foster feel at home, cue the jazz music like
every
7 minutes. Yeah,
he did message me.
I sent him a message and said, start the jazz music.
So if you never listen to the Internet Advisor Show on JR, literally we get about, what, after you're done doing your, like, hey, welcome and all that, we get maybe like, what, 4.5, 5 minutes?
Oh, jeez.
And then cue jazz, and then they play commercials, and then come back on air. You know, and it's that way for about a solid hour.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
four segments
yeah.
in.
I really envy you guys. Matter of fact, the whole – we had you on. To me, as a professional broadcaster for all these years, you represent the next – we went from broadcasting, which was JR's power.
Yeah.
50,000 watts, one of the 12 stations.
50,000 watts.
Yeah. Funky hip-hop power. Yes.
One of the 12 stations in the country who are a clear channel, 50,000 watts, part of that initial – emergency broadcast system. That was the initial emergency broadcast. Everybody else in a crisis, when the aliens hit, everybody else goes off the air, and those 12 stations are supposed to cover everything then and, you know, give people directions on where to go, et cetera. So, I mean, that's been the nature of broadcasting. Splatter everybody and pick up a few in the meantime.
Yeah.
Whereas you guys start out with a very focused base and grow from there. And I think that's been certainly the power of podcasting.
See, now, does that bother you being like a true tried professional?
Watching jackasses like
watching
us.
Watching jackasses like us. Being able to do this.
We're not the worst.
Yeah. We're by no means over.
No, I, you know, in some ways to complain about that or fight against it. I mean, it'd be like, you know, somebody in the horse and buggy era complaining that they couldn't make wagons anymore.
Right.
The way they used to. You know, it's just, there's a very, now this group of people who listen faithfully will be there for a short period of time longer, you know, as a pool. Oh, I have to say, and I'm very thankful for this, that we're also affiliated through the Michigan Talk Radio Network, which just Steve Gruber just recently bought that.
Sure.
Steve and Ivy out of Lansing. And they're reviving that. And I guess it's funny. I was on a this was a number of years ago. I was on an audition someplace for a commercial of some kind. And it turned out that a number of us, maybe like three or four of us, were old broadcasters who were there, literally old and literally broadcasters. But the mellow voices that have been around town for a long time.
Yeah.
And we all started talking about where we would, if we could go back to radio, where would we want to go? And all of them talked about going back to either mid-size or smaller radio stations where you create a community and nurture that community. And they like, so you go to Gladwin or wherever, yeah. You know, the people who listen in there are catching, you know, what's going on. And
well, I mean, that's almost your podcast demographic. I mean, that's the people that are opting in that exactly. Want to pay attention and be a part of things.
Exactly, exactly. So that smaller market, that mid-sized market, I think will still always exist as a place for people. But I think that the larger stations – I mean, it was funny, though. We went on the air with the Internet Advisor 20 years ago, and about exactly the same time we went on there, it was like the death knell – God help me, somebody in JR is going to kill me for this – but it was almost like at that moment, things flipped. They were flipping. And the – like, for instance, the station I started on in Garden City was 5,000 watts, I think. All of a sudden, at that point in 98, 99, that station could be heard on the same level as JR at 50,000 watts if it had the proper outlet. It didn't need 50,000 watts
right.
To gather an audience. Well, it could be reaching people at the same with the same power that JR could.
See, JR is always amazing to me, like when you go to Cleveland and if you're driving home at yeah. Night where you can pick up the station because there's no interference over the water,
mm-hmm.
You can literally listen to JR like the whole ride home, 3.5-hour drive from Cleveland.
I used to do something that was called the Snow Patrol, and I did it. I got to JR in 96, and I started doing overnights, filling in for Kevin Joyce at the time. And a Snow Patrol was something that I kind of created that was – when it was really miserable outside and it was going to be a bad night for everybody, I'd go down to the station, we get on the air, and we'd start talking to people. Where are you? What's going on? What's happening? And I had one night I talked to a family that was marooned on an expressway in southern Indiana. And the National Guard was coming to pull them out because they were – so you had that ability to reach out and touch people like that. That's gone. And in its place, we have, you know, pre-programmed stuff that yeah. Comes down from the network. You know, so in some ways, I think a lot of stations have kind of given up on that.
Well, yes. I mean, is radio facing some of the same challenges that, you know, the news industry is?
Oh,
you know,
some yes.
Of where you've got, you know, there's a lot of stories have been coming out lately about, like, the Freep and Detroit News, you know, and being bought by Gannett. And now it's, you know, yep. It's not a – quote unquote local paper anymore because it's, right. You know, stories are getting pushed down from right. Outside. So, I mean, is that just the way the media is going now?
Oh, I think it certainly is. People are, well, I don't think the corporations can afford the massive structures that they've built. They just can't afford it. They simply can't afford it. And the shame in that, in many ways, is that the good journalism, the people who were really intelligent, were doing some of the sifting of the news that we counted on beforehand, they've kind of gone. There's just no room for them.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, what was it, 4 years ago or something like that when I wrote Not Necessarily the News, you know, on our website mm-hmm. where, you know, CNN got a Supreme Court verdict wrong. Oh, and everyone started reposting it and following suit with it. And like, you know, and you didn't have that back in the day when it was, I mean, and people forget, you know, hey kids, not too long ago, we didn't have a 24/7 news cycle.
Right,
if you wanted the news, you woke your ass up at 6 in the morning.
Dude, Anchorman 2
or you
does just dictates or shows that off just brilliantly how that came to be.
Yeah. Or you sat down 5 to 7 and you watched
Puppy Dogs and American Flags and people want to, you know, yeah. Like, don't give them what they want to hear, give them what they want to hear, not what they need to hear.
Yeah.
A friend of mine was an AP bureau chief in Eastern Europe and then, I mean, all over the place. I mean, a real professional writer and news person. And I remember talking to him about that the 24-hour cycle just wiped everything out. You know, you had no longer a deadline you were working towards. It was there all
first.
The time.
Everything is real time.
Get there first.
Yeah, exactly. And then it became get there first. And then it became who had a camera, you know, a phone camera on
yep.
it. And so
– And now it's who can do Facebook Live first.
There you go.
Right.
I think a lot of the news articles are even being written by AI now, I think
yeah.
I read.
So, oh, really?
So, I mean – just imagine, I think Fox Sports laid off most of their Detroit news people.
Right? Yeah, they said, well, like, God, there was a story like about a year ago, I think we talked about where like sports recaps in particular were being written by AI.
So where are all, I mean, that takes away the whole reason for local journalism, right?
Well, we have a news bureau at JR, and I sometimes wonder how long that can go on. I mean, wonderful guys, Dick Hafner and Gene Fogel and a lot of the other people who have been there for ages. You know, some of the older folks would remember those names. But, I mean, they've been there for ages doing a great job. But you wonder how long they can. It was fascinating. In our studios at JR, there is a traffic lady who does the traffic
I saw her. She's on the way to the bathrooms. And I had to be really quiet when I walked to the bathroom. Because yeah. She was doing the live traffic. Right?
But she was doing live traffic for Chicago.
That's it. The Dan Ryan. And Dan switching to New York.
I heard her and I go, Dan Ryan, where the hell? What? She's doing just reading for multiple cities.
She was doing either do New York and I know of the New York, Chicago, and Detroit.
And I listen to 97.1 all the time. And you have like Tony Ortiz who does not just for 97.1, but he'll jump over to do another station, jump over to because they're all a bunch of sister stations. And they'll do like the same update like six times. Just crazy, crazy business now.
So and it's all driven by cost. Well, the company that owned JR went bankrupt. You know, it's restructuring right now. But anyway, the point is, you know, it's and the company before that I think had been on the rocks and was being gobbled up as well. And nobody can afford the debt that's coming forward with these radio networks. And then I would guess with the TV networks as well.
Yeah. Well, and it is. I mean, and then, you know, just kind of come full circle with this. I mean, that's, you know, one of the things that we've seen more and more over the past couple of years is, you know, you've got all of the, you know, radio stations that are pushing people towards Play.it, iHeartRadio, all that, you know, all those things, you know, Getch, the podcast version.
Not just that, Dave, like Channel 4.
Now you got WWJ and WDIV that are trying to launch podcast networks.
Right. There's like a podcast music.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Downtown.
I rolled my eyes for everyone at home.
I heard a radio ad for it and they go, and come on in and record your family stories and your what? I'm like sitting going, what?
No kidding. Yeah. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, like record your band.
Oh, well,
like,
see, neither did we. And apparently it's been going on for like 6 months. So that tells you how that's going.
Because I hear a radio ad on like whatever music I was listening to.
Well, it is typical, you know, of the they've got to do that to keep up. They have got to do that. They got to plug into an iHeartRadio or whatever else it happens to be out there. JR, I think they had their app online. Was it 2 or 3 years ago that they had their app online? You know, so many of the they've had to do it in order to be able to keep the people who are online, give them an opportunity to hook them in.
Well, I mean, it's the factor of, you know, we've said a million times, you know, we kind of lucked into doing this, you know, at the right time.
Oh, you know, you guys hit it right.
Like we live in an on-demand world now. You know, it's like, you know, the days of must-see TV died with Friends.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I want –
we call it an appointment radio.
Yeah.
You know, that's
I want
all
what
on.
I want, when I want, how I want. So, you know, like I like your morning show, 97.1 or whatever, but I work second shift. Don't tell me I got to wake up at 6 in the morning to listen to your morning show. But you record it, put the podcast version out. Yeah, I'll listen to it at noon when I'm driving in.
I think the drive shows still hold some audience, still hold a pretty good audience, like Paul W. in the morning.
But yeah,
the
morning commute, afternoon commute,
The problem is I've done those shows, and you said it. You know, literally, I had I sat in for Paul W. This is back in the late 90s. And I had maybe 7 minutes to do an interview. I mean, that meant like a question and maybe a rejoinder, maybe a rejoinder. And then we're back to it's time for traffic. It's time for weather. And then PSAs and yep. spots and everything else. And you had 5, 7, 10 minutes of commercials on top of it.
You should that be driving
a political season or Christmas.
So you should be driving a Kia from Summer Place Kia. From Summer Place Kia.
Your favorite place ever.
Foster, I went to Grand Rapids for a soccer tournament with my kids. And so, oh my God, I wake up in the morning to go get me a coffee and a bagel. And I hear, you should be driving a Kia. And I thought I was hearing things. And it was like, new Summer Place Kia, Grand Rapids. And I'm like, oh my God, they bought a dealership in Grand Rapids. I can't get away from
it. They're stalking you, Bob.
I know, right? They moved to my hometown.
Everywhere, find Kias or something.
Right. So 20 years talking tech, what are of your favorite like innovations or favorite things that have come out or things you've talked about? Ooh. Can you pinpoint like one or two? Or am I just a... Me, Dave, and I actually
been so much change. To be honest with you,
yeah.
So much change. It's hard to point to any one thing. I think the iPhone, you know, the breakthrough that meant in terms of technology was probably one of the biggest ones. The guys gave me this Apple Watch during the program on the 20th anniversary. It was really kind of cool. They said, "Wait a minute, we got one more thing we're going to do," and I hadn't. Know what's going to happen. And so now I'm fully vested.
I think you're right because I have an aunt who is 80 years old and I got her an iPad several years ago and she loves it. And she had several updates and she wanted iPhone, the iPhone X. So my aunt, an 80-year-old aunt has an iPhone X.
Yep.
My grandfather kept bringing home crappy PCs from pawn stores. I'm like, Granddad, you're never going to get this Windows 10 machine working right. And I sent him an iPad for Christmas this year. And I came back and he showed me everything he's doing with it.
Yeah.
I think you're right. From a usability and pushing tech forward, I think you're right.
Yes.
The iPhone's probably
And I think Steve Jobs in that sense really he just opened the floodgates at that point for usability.
Oh, ease of use. Absolutely.
It just works. At least it did then. Not so much now anymore.
Well, they weren't a great technology company. They were a great
marketing
UX,
company.
UX and marketing.
Yes.
The user experience was second to none, and they made it sexy where you could like show it off and go like, wow, that's, you know.
No, I wonder, Mobile World Congress is coming up in Barcelona next weekend, I think it is. And big talk about 5G being the star of the show. I wonder if that will be the next leap. I don't understand the technology well enough to be able to comment on it, but I'm fascinated by what I've heard that it will disconnect you from the need for a lot of the networks.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, and honestly, I mean, 4G was one of the things. And when you want to talk about technology and podcasting, I mean, 4G was really what helped podcasting leap forward. Because, I mean, podcasts have been around since 1997.
Yes, yes.
You know, and then RSS feeds hit, and then you had, you know, but now once you had an iPhone that was a consumable device that could go ahead and grab them and pull them down, and you had a 4G network.
The problem is you had to download them in the past, and you didn't have that capacity on your phone.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. Did you guys notice that there was, like, with podcasts, there seemed to be kind of 2003, 2004, 2005, there was a burst of them, and then they just kind of faded away.
Mm-hmm.
And was it – you think it was the iPhone then that really
absolutely.
Brought it back around?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because you could listen to it now on a phone. And now, not only that, you have Bluetooth-enabled cars.
Yep.
So now I can podcast Bluetooth car. I don't have to download anything. It doesn't screw up the hard drive.
Well, or now I've got
phone.
Google Play or Apple in my car built into my dashboard, and I don't even need my phone.
Even more of that, yep.
I would never buy a car without Android or Google Play in the car. No, never.
We got a car, the 2012 Ford Focus, and I love the vehicle, but it doesn't have Bluetooth, and it's driving me batty. So I had to buy a Bluetooth speaker, and portable one that connects my phone.
It's the old, you know, the Walkman that had the adapter that you plug into the cassette player.
Right. Yeah. It's the equivalent of having headphones and a boombox on your front seat.
So, I mean, things have changed. These 20 years represent, I think, in some ways, a real sea change that has taken place in terms of communication, period. That we are now communicating much more directly with one another.
Well, you look
touch, bad touch.
The thing that always gets me.
Oh, yeah.
No, the thing that always gets me is as children, as I grew up, and, you know, I was born in 73, as I grew up, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, hey, Bobby, go turn the antenna. So I had to go underneath the TV, you know, and I had to turn the antenna left and right until we got – or the mess with the rabbit ears or, you know, the vertical hold on the TV. Yeah, now
– we were the remote control.
Right. Yeah. Now yeah. If Netflix glitches, my kids are like, hey, Dad, glitch it. It's glitching.
Yeah, like, go mess with the router.
God. Which is today, right. Yeah. Reboot the router, Dad. It's glitching. Like, oh, my God. But they become like, as soon as I never complained, I was just happy to get whatever.
Yeah.
And now it just seems like it's there's so much.
I can actually remember going to my grandmother's house just in terms of that. This is 1951 and watching this tiny little screen that was flickering away and looking at Ed Sullivan or whoever happened to be just getting onto the airwaves at that time. So I've been around for enormous change. I was just in the Sam's Club looking at these incredible screens, 55-inch, you know.
For $300.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Oh, my God,
yeah. It's just astounding what's out there.
Like, do you remember? I remember when my father paid for a top-loading VHS player, like $700.
Oh, yeah, one of the very first that had the remote the cord.
Do you remember your first computers? Like mine had like a 5400 baud modem or something. Yep. I think my old man paid like $2,200 for this, like, IBM clone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now you get a Chromebook for $200 and everything's in the cloud. And but now your life is monthly fees.
Yeah.
It's very much giant, you know.
Yeah. Streaming becomes really the bottom line, I think. It'd be interesting to see, because there's a lot about cord cutters going on. It'll be interesting to see who ends up controlling the bandwidth. I think that will be the basic issue coming.
Well, and that's where the whole net neutrality thing comes into play. And that's where it's going to get real interesting, because the more people that are cutting the cord, well, yeah, they may be turning their cable boxes back in, but they still need their internet connection.
That's exactly.
And by the time you add up all the apps that you have to buy, you're paying just as much.
Well, and wasn't there an article we read not too long ago?
$8 or something.
It's like $8 that you cost Comcast when you quote unquote cut the cord.
Yeah. Because you're still buying, you got to get Hulu, and then you got to get Netflix, and you're going to get Sling.
If you want live, you're paying for YouTube, which is $35 a month. YouTube's live streaming, yeah.
Is it $35 a month?
$35, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Just announced.
I don't know if we'll ever get to the place of, what do you guys think? Are we ever going to get to the place of enough of a competitive field that the prices will be forced down?
I hope so. I mean, honestly, my biggest thing is that the change that I've wanted for a long, long time is get rid of the damn bundling. Like, knowing that $12 of my cable bill every month was ESPN, and I turn on ESPN once a year.
No, Dave,
maybe.
It's the I have to buy phone service to get my bill down that I don't even plug in. I go, we're just going to ship you the box. Don't even bother plugging it in.
Yeah.
And then I get a cheaper price. It's like, well, what are you doing to us?
Yep.
And I think these cable companies have huge monopolies. So they own the access. They own all the equipment. So until we have real competition in the cable market, I think we'll never have better prices.
If satellite ever gets to the point that they can compete with fiber to the home cable in the ground.
This announcement, they're launching satellites and trying to bring
That's going up on the next SpaceX rocket, are going to be a bundle of these much smaller satellites that they're going to spray around the atmosphere.
I think they said with like maybe 100 satellites, they could cover the entire world gig broadband.
See, and that's where it's going to change quickly.
World, yeah. That
very quickly.
Yes, I think so.
So I mean, HughesNet was the one that was the only one that was actually a viable
much better
option.
Than flamethrowers, Elon.
Much better. Much better than a Model S in space.
Right.
You know, the problem has been with the dish satellite is that while you could stream things down pretty effectively. Upload
was always deaf.
Was a DSL.
Yeah.
And my daughter lived north of Oxford for a while. And it was absolutely – it made me crazy. I went out there to babysit once, and while I could bring stuff down quickly, getting any kind of a connection out through that DSL line was almost impossible.
Where it's raining, the Netflix has gone out.
Yeah.
What's really interesting, 41% of America, which equates to 5 million households with like school-age children, no service whatsoever in the United States today.
Wow. Really?
Today.
Nuri, how much Netflix are you watching over a satellite connection? Not much.
Not
because
much, no.
You have still bandwidth caps of like 40 gigs a month.
Really? On satellite?
Yeah, my parents have satellite now.
Weak.
I think all my house does 600 gigs a month.
Yeah.
Hey, Dave, it's time to cue the jazz music. Foster, we're going to coach you. Hey, on behalf of all of us, so seriously, 20 years, that is a huge accomplishment
Thank
for
you.
One show. We hope to hit 5, which is this year, but
you guys are on your way. You're doing a great job.
We love having you on here. And
Thank you.
And we commend you on everything you guys have been doing, and look forward to the next 20.
Thank you so much. It's been just a delight being with you guys, and kind of just kind of sitting back and watching you guys surfing into the future.
Ladies and gentlemen, Foster Brown, WJR Internet Advisor Show. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back. Dan and Clayton, Newspire. This is the IT and the D Show.
And we'll be right back.